My name is John Bars.
And mine is Jill Bars.
Okay, it's great to be with you, John and Jill, here in rainy England, I think, right now. The sun was shining. I would like for each of you, we can start with you, John, with your first encounter with Schaefer, if you were a Christian at the time, and just kind of tell me a little bit about that.
I was not a Christian. I was at university as a university lecturer. And my brother had gone to Swiss Le Brie, and by then was probably a worker at Swiss Le Brie. And he came back for a holiday, and I'm a biologist. And he, I think, made the mistake of tackling me in my own field, which is not very wise. But the result of our disagreement was that he gave me the first book, which was Escape from Reason, which was then just published, knowing that I would read anything. Now, it had very little effect, to be honest. It probably set the scene for what was going to happen later. And I think that that's my first interaction with Schaefer in the book, about 3 years before I became a Christian.
So did you meet Schaefer himself before you became a Christian?
Not directly. About 3 years later, I went through a family crisis, like my father dying and my wife leaving me in the same day. And of course, I sort of felt a bit, because if you've got a nice, happy philosophy which accounts for death and other such nice things like that, it doesn't account for things that hit you. It's a nice theory, but... And shortly after that, I just delved into work, to be honest, and living artificially, like even ironing the underpants. That's my joke. But I got a phone call from Switzerland at the university, where Dr. Schaefer sat on the phone for 15 minutes while they found me. And then he said, "Don't bother about any of our rules. Come when you have to." So telling me to come to Swiss Le Brie when I had to. Now, in actual fact, I didn't feel I needed to at that point. But about 3 months down the line, it all fell apart. And it fell apart so thoroughly that I didn't dare get even a temporary passport, which would have only been 24 hours. I just rang my brother up, who was here, as a worker here, because here had opened by then, and said, "Could I come?" And he was very well... No, I said, "Could I go to Ealing, actually?" And he said, "It's not residential, you'll have to come here." He was very wise. He left me to myself when I got here. He didn't throw family at me, because he knew very well that family was part of the problem, in the sense that I, as the eldest, had let down my mother. So I came here. I was only able to be here for 2 weeks because I got jury duty on a very complicated trial, but in God's wisdom, that was the right thing. I didn't do any thinking, any talking to anyone. I got hugged a lot. People where I was, my identity was being able to think faster and outthink them. And here, people didn't care about that. They didn't care who I was. I was just a person in need. But when I had to go back, I would, you know, I don't know what would have happened. You can't write what-if history. But I was landed with a trial which required an incredible amount of thought and concentration, and putting up with the fact that the judge thought I was too young to have that ability. But that was 2 weeks of very hard work, and it made sure I didn't give up thinking. Hmm. I then, in and out, came back here most weekends for the next 2 or 3 years prior to going to seminary. And it was at seminary when I first saw Schaefer. I mean, he'd been here and taken a couple of services, but I'd never spoken to him. But he actually came and sat down at my table at the Christmas dinner at the seminary.
And the seminary would have been Covenant?
Covenant, yeah.
Yes, uh-huh.
Covenant in St. Louis. And just talked to me for a bit, but which gave me a lot of cred and the rest of the people at my table. But, yeah, then that's my interaction with Schaefer, basically. I mean, when we came out of seminary, we came back to here. Both of us by then were married.
To each other,
I mean. And we were workers here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 77, 79 was when we were here.
Okay.
My brother was still here then, but no problems working with him. We worked very well together. Okay. So,
Jill, what about you?
Funnily enough, my first interaction, if you like, but not personally with Schaefer, was also through reading Escape from Reason. I read it the year it was published, I think it was 68, I was in my second year at university. And I was a Christian, I was brought up in an evangelical family. And that my parents, my father particularly, was a thinking person, but when I got to university, I just found that there was a big divide, what I was studying, which was languages, but within the context I was studying 18th century French philosophy and existentialism. So I had so many questions. I found it fascinating, but I didn't find anyone who was a Christian who could sort of interact with that. So it was as if there was a brick wall. Here was I doing these studies. Here I was, I had a faith, I was a Christian, but I had so many questions. And I thought, well, if it's true, it has to be able to speak to that, but I can't make sense of it. And if it's not true, then I'm not interested, you know. So I read Escape from Reason. Couldn't, to be honest, make really head or tail of it. Schaefer's style is somewhat opaque, shall we say. He's wonderful, but I just knew. It was enough for me to know that this was somewhere I was going to find the answer to my question. So I thought, I've got to go to this place. And then in my second year, I got, as many students do, got very depressed. And a friend of mine who was an art student there said, you've got to go to this place, Le Brie, in Switzerland, and talk to this particular person. It wasn't Schaefer, actually, but somebody else who was working there. But so I did eventually found my way there in 1970. I heard Schaefer in a conference, one of the English Le Brie conferences they had in 68 and 69, and I went to the one in 1969. And everybody was there. I mean, Ralph and Susan were there, Dr. and Mrs. Schaefer were there, Oz, Donald, I mean, they were all there. So I heard Schaefer, and I think somebody said, well, what was the thing that first struck you? I think when I went, because of the problems I had, I thought, I don't believe that this man can be as thinking, you know, an intellectual Christian that people say he is, and as spiritual as people. I just don't, you know, I was a bit sceptical, but when I heard him speak, I was completely bowled over. I mean, the person who hit me most intellectually, I would say, was Hans Schuckmacher. He just completely... I was on cloud nine. But Schaefer's integrity and spirituality, I thought, yes, no, what people say is right. So that was 1969. 1970, I went out to Swiss Le Brie just for a short while because I was working or doing a year in Strasbourg. And then in 1971, I knew I needed to come back for a longer time. So I graduated in 71, and by that time I was going to go to Switzerland, but of course at the beginning of 1971 this place opened, and I came down before it opened, I think, and somebody said, well, why don't you come here? So I thought, well, why not? It's a lot easier. So I ended up coming in the October of that year, 1971, as a student, became a helper, and in fact became a worker in the spring of 1972. Rather early on, because Susan was pregnant and having a really hard time. And then I obviously met Schaefer. when he used to come to visit the family and to speak and to preach. Do you want me to say something more now? Or
yes, well, you can just tell me as you when you met the person, because we read the book, you get the intellectual intellectual side. Schaefer may have been, I'm not sure he was the only one, but it dawns to me that he was one of the first Christian, evangelical Christians, to do what I would refer to as intellectual history. He showed the flow of historical thought and what its outcome was. Now, I don't think he got it right in every case, but he got the general flow, which I thought was good. Mm-hmm. So, but the man himself, so what stood out about that?
Well, I think there's one little episode I remember just very clearly because it was kind of funny. I think he was such a man of prayer. I think that's the thing, the overweening thing that comes over to me. Because one day before you, I think John must have been in St. Louis by that time maybe, and I was working here. And I met him in the hallway here, and I'd just done a bit of washing or something. And in those days, you know, it was very basic. And I think I got this stuff that I was dripping, you know, I was holding it in my hand and kind of running across the hall. And he calls out to me because he knew that we were going to get married in a few months or whatever. And he says, Jill, I just want to pray with you and John. So there's me standing in the hallway with this dripping piece of clothing, praying with Dr. Schaefer. But that's what he did. And Susan, his daughter, was just like that. She would do that too. Because we were working together with Ron and Susan. I think that, of everything else, that his wisdom. I mean, I talked to him about a little bit about myself because I hadn't really talked to anybody when I became a worker because it was all so rushed. But very wise and very wise and patient and not overbearing. But I think that little incident was the thing that really I've always remembered.
John, you go to seminary, so do you leave your academic post?
Yes.
Did you ever return?
No, for two reasons. Okay. One was that when I first became a Christian, it didn't really affect my life very much. And so that's fine. You know, one thing, you know, my house was the nearest place to the university and it was crash pad for anyone who wanted to come. And I just made the only rule that changed was if you're not married, you don't sleep in the same room. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it didn't really affect me at all. And then I decided I wanted to go to seminary. And Covenant was recommended because Jeremy had been there and so on. And then it was affecting my life. And no one knew how to react to me at all. And people I'd worked with for 10 years stopped talking to me. And the only people who talked to me at all for that year in the university, with one exception, were people who had to because they were students and I was teaching them. Hmm. But they only talked to me in class, never anywhere else. So I didn't see it at the time as anything other than, this is a bit of hard work. And I honestly think that they just didn't know how to handle someone where Christianity was affecting their lives. But Jerem commented later that this used me as an example of persecution. And I not thought of it as that, but it was, of course. I mean, people you've worked with and lived with for 10 years, that's not the right way to handle them if you don't understand them or you don't agree with them. So, yeah, that was a hard 6 months before I actually went. But yeah, other than that, no, it's. I can't remember the question you asked me.
I was asking you really more of your personal life. You said you're an academic.
Yeah.
And then you said, oh, but I went to seminary. So I was wondering, well, did you just go to seminary for personal fulfillment and then come back to your teaching post, or did you never come back to your teaching post?
Well, I think the thing is my own personal conversion was an incredibly intellectual thing. Mm-hmm. The old Latin fathers, you know, the three stages of faith, you know, cognoscens, ascens, and fidens, they're actually separated in time. Now, of course, in eternal time, my name was written in the Book of Life, so I'm not arguing that way.
Right.
I'm talking about subjective experience. You know, the fact that this is real, the fact that I agree that it's real, and that it matters to me and changes my life in those kind of orders. And that all happened here over about a 3-month period, maybe.
By here, you mean at La Brea.
In the manor here.
Right, yes.
So when I went to university, when I decided to go to seminary, I knew there were a couple of things. A, I was a biologist who did not believe in evolution. I've never believed in evolution. And that taught me one lesson about evangelism, which was something I'd learned from Schaefer anyway. Don't ever react. Always find out where they are before you start preaching at them. Because if, you know, if they don't believe in evolution, there's no point in talking to them about it. I mean, if they bring it up, then find out which kind of evolution they believe in and those kind of things. But that was so Schaefer. Ask questions, find out where they are, deal with the questions. Don't deal with what you think the questions are, and so on. That profoundly affected me in the way in which you deal with things. And I was very fortunate. I learned, we had a course on Schaefer. And some of my friends wanted to know what this method was. And I very, very unwisely decided to show them what the method was. And, you know, in the sense of asking questions, keep on asking questions, keep on asking questions, let a person dig their own pit.
Yes.
And I did it with a little Marxist girl who was a friend of someone, 17-year-old from New York. And I got to the bottom and I thought to myself, this is wrong. The next question will destroy her. And Schaefer would never do that. So I let her win all the points back out. Now, what the effect was, but I mean, the point was I was using a method. Schaefer never used a method. Schaefer always was. One of our history professors summed up the difference between Schaefer and Van Til as saying that, you know, philosophically they're in the same place, but the difference was that Van Til would say you're sitting on a chair that doesn't exist and whip the chair away. Schaefer would build a set of steps out to bring you back. That was a difference. And that was the difference that I had to find. Never ever forget the person on the far end of your talking. And Schaefer never ever did.
And I think that's something that's been missed. So I'm glad you bring it up. I think that's something that's been missed by those who have tried to implement Schaefer's approach. They've missed that element, and I think it comes across as very harsh.
Well, they've missed what it's about.
Yes.
I mean, I was trying to be clever and demonstrate, and it was the wrong thing to do. That isn't what this is for. This is to bring people to Christ. It's not to show how bright and clever I am or how stupid they are. Both of which are true, but that's not what it's about.
Right.
And Schaefer would never, ever have done what I did.
I remember Schaefer saying somewhere that when you see the person in front of you, do not first see a sinner, first see a person.
Yeah.
And of course, it's true, they are sinners, as we all are, right? But it was where do you start? How do you view that which is in front of you? And I'm concerned for people who, even today, who like Schaefer, they that approach, but I still think they're missing a very important element. So I'm glad you bring it up and get it on record, because, and you're not the only one who says it, of course, but this is what's been missing, because Schaefer died. So we've got generation now that knows the name, well, not that well, but they do know something. Some know something about Schaefer. And what they've done is they've read a book, and usually the God who was there, and it's wonderful. But they haven't read something like True Spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I think there's the wanting in what we are doing. So Jill, in your, what did you study at university? You, languages?
I studied French mainly and Spanish. But within that, obviously, I studied literature. So yes, that's where the philosophy comes in.
Right. So conversations, where would you say that Schaefer, if it's the case, help you in your thinking? And you say, well, you were really, you know, it stands out to you that he was a man of prayer.
Yeah.
But now let's talk about the other side, more the intellectual. And is it true? Did he help you in any way, or to think through these things, or not?
Yes, he did. I'm afraid, unlike my husband, I'm not. I haven't got his brains, and I probably couldn't talk in detail about things from sort of 40 years ago. I mean, I think he gave me the tools for thinking about, you know, he gave a framework. He showed that Christianity wasn't just, you know, believing in Jesus and being saved. I mean, I was brought up in the Baptist church, and with a good Bible-believing church,
yes,
but not a lot of putting it into any kind of context of worldview. I think that's one of the most useful terms that, you know, I've ever come across, better than philosophy, because everybody has a worldview. It doesn't matter who they are. And so I think that was helpful to understand that, you know, everybody is coming from somewhere, and you have to find out where that place is. And I, as a Christian, I'm coming from somewhere, and I live in a context. I live in a world, and I see the world, hopefully as God sees it, but as the Bible portrays it. And it that you can fit, you know, if you're studying something which is very secular, because of this concept, this terrible phrase really of true truth that, yes, Schaefer used, because that is so, it is, you know, it's right across the board. It gets away from this idea that Christianity is true, the Bible is true, and it's in some little box, sort of in a vacuum. But that, you know, everything is out there, and you can, the truth, I'm not explaining it very well, but, you know, you can interact with everything, because, yes, we live, it is all within God's world. There isn't something, anything that's outside. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm afraid I can't talk.
No, I think it's quite, no, you're quite right. I think you're reflecting. You know, Schaefer would say that the Bible is true because it's true to what is.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So we can talk about what is, mm-hmm, from the Bible, because the Bible is true about what is. And that had not been something that was a part of, I would even say, from the middle 19th century. There are exceptions, of course, but the general flow of evangelicalism, and actually, if I'm going to be historically correct, I think you start seeing the shades of that probably closer to the beginning of the 20th century, because evangelicalism is quite a mixed bag prior to the turn of the 20th century. Mm. But
yeah.
I very wonderful people. When I came to Christ, when I was 20, and I grew up in New England, and there weren't a lot of Christians, but they were Christians who were legalistic, but they were wonderful people, mm-hmm, and they loved the Lord. Mm-hmm. And just as I got, you know, I get saved in 1965. And I read Schaefer in 1979. Mm-hmm. And then I had these struggles, but I didn't know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. So I always want to be so careful that I'm not in any way disrespecting those who are responsible for me coming to Christ,
including
my own father, mm-hmm, which I disagreed with on certain points as time went on. I wouldn't be where I am today if it weren't for them, humanly speaking. But when what you're sharing, when I came to see that. I didn't go to the university till I was 35. And I'm sitting and I'm reading that God was there. But maybe even more profoundly than that was how she would then live. Mm-hmm. We just watched the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was struck by this. I was absolutely struck by it in the late 70s. And I realized I could ask questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And up to that time, these dear people just would say, no, no, don't ask questions,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Just believe. But that was the point. What am I supposed to believe about this or about that?
It's very interesting because when I went to seminary, Covenant was very small.
Mm-hmm.
28 people were in my starting class. And I forget what you call it in the States for the first sort of service to start. 15 of us claimed Schaefer. Aldebury, in one or another, for the reason why we were there.
Yeah.
More than half of us.
Mm-hmm.
But then, during the lessons, we actually partitioned quite heavily into those who, if I can be rude about them, were brought up as covenant children, do not disagree with an elder. And all our lecturers were elders.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half of us, who had been taught through Labrie and influences of Labrie, to question everything. So we actually hit head on a couple of times. I mean, in quite serious ways.
Mm.
And it took a wise teacher to get round it.
Mm.
I mean, we had a couple of wise teachers, which is very good. But, you know, that was very much this necessity of questioning. Which, I mean, that's what I was brought up as a scientist. You question everything. And this was really helpful in the context that I became a Christian because I could question. Philosophically, I was able to do this. You know, and that matched. While I was at seminary, Schaefer was declared a heretic by one of your universities because he said you could question Bob Jones. So he said we could question the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, that neglects what Psalms says.
Yeah.
And the other thing that for me, obviously, well, one of my main areas of apologetics has always been evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the first way I normally start, apart from saying the end of time is the wrong one you're looking at, you should be looking up there, not that back there, because that's the one that matters to you,
mm-hmm.
is to say, you know, for a Christian, because much of mine has been to Christians, telling them they're not silly to believe the Bible. For a Christian, nature is wonderful. And Romans 1 spells it out.
Yes, it does.
All the evidence is there. You just got to hold on to it.
Yes.
Which is what we have to say. Now, but I couldn't have said that if I hadn't come through Schaefer.
Mm-hmm. Schaefer seems to have been influenced, though he didn't agree totally with this individual, but Michael Polanyi.
Yep, I had to study Polanyi when I was here.
And Polanyi was this would be anachronistic, but he was a critical realist.
Mm-hmm.
And he understood, as Schaefer did, that when we looked at something, we had to interpret it through our mind, and our minds affected how we saw that. But there were these people who would just say, no, this is what I'm saying is exactly the same thing that the Bible is saying. And consequently, we spoke with an epistemological dogmatism that couldn't be sustained.
Well, I think Ranald got me to read Polanyi while I was here. And I was devastated. And he said, wasn't that exciting? I said, no, it wasn't. And he said, why wasn't it exciting? I said, because the man is right, but he hasn't drawn the right conclusions. I mean, he is right, but he did not draw the right conclusions. So I've been very sort of, let's look under my glasses at these people who say that Polanyi was a Christian.
Yeah, no.
Which is ridiculous.
No, no.
He very clearly wasn't.
And Schaefer makes that point, I believe, in one of the books.
Yeah,
he was not a Christian, but he had been a scientist.
Yeah.
And he saw where this logical positivism was going, that everybody's speaking with this absolute dogmatism in science. And he realized, He knew enough to know that's not true.
Well, it's not true in science nowadays,
are you? It's not true in science. It's not true anywhere, right? We are creatures who we're finite and we're fallen.
Yeah.
Even redeemed, we still have the rags about us.
Well, I mean, three particular images, but one of them summarizes the other two. So I'll take the outside two, the glorious ruin image and the fact that we're all built in God's image.
Yes.
So all of us have got some, not soteriological truth, but all of us have got some non-soteriological good in us.
Yes.
I mean, least of all, or most of all, depending on which way you think of it, the imageness.
Yeah.
Now, Schaeffer actually has that image at the end of the church in the end of the 20th century of the plateau.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can sit here and I'm trying to concentrate on the greatness of God, and if I'm not careful, I fall off because I forget the significance and wonder of humanity. I can go the other side and I can try and work out how wonderful man is. If I'm not careful, I lose God.
Yes.
What we've got to do is to walk around in the middle of this thing. We can disagree. Providing both on the plateau.
Yes.
And that's the issue. And I've used that image so many times, particularly in the evolutionary field, you know, because I think Schaeffer had a three-pronged right, one of which was new. You know, man is sinful, man is fallen. I mean, it's the fallenness of the intellect on the one hand, but significance on the other hand. But the third one, and this was Schaeffer's special to me, part of that significance and finiteness is that we can't understand how those work together. And Schaeffer said that so clearly. And that to me is, you know, it's not giving up the game by throwing your logic out of the window. It's just saying we are finite, limited, and sinful.
That's right.
And that's it. And that, I think, was one of the most important lessons for the kind of work that I was doing, you know, in quote-unquote ministry. But here, talking to people here,
yeah,
I can disagree with you, providing we're on the plateau, but I can't give you all the answers.
Yes.
It's the sufficient, not exhaustive.
Yes.
Again, which is another one of his phrases
that
hit me anyway.
Yeah. And one place, speaking on the middle one, he says, man is noble. And then he says, well, but maybe you don't like that term. But, it does cause some people to almost think it's a heretical claim. Mm-hmm. But he knew how to hold those two in balance. Fallen, but noble. And it gave an answer to why, as he would say, on the one hand, you could even see the unsaved person doing some very wonderful things, but you can also see him doing some very cruel things. And let's remember, we weren't that far from World War II, right?
Yeah.
So we had plenty of illustrations of that sort of thing. You work in apologetics. So what are you, to some degree, yes?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Yes. So what ideas do you think that Schaeffer, maybe not new ideas, but the way he expressed them, or maybe new ideas, that makes Schaeffer important for today?
Well, the first one is one we've discussed, and that is you can talk about anything. And we mustn't be frightened because it is God's world. And the anything that we might face up with, you know, might be pretty difficult, might be pretty horrendous, might be impossible for me individually to answer. But that doesn't matter. My job is to try and bring some light, bring some chink that the Holy Spirit can work into the lives of another person. I know I tend to be far too intellectual. I mean, I'm fully aware of that. But, I mean, that's the people I tend to work with as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, at one stage I was used to try and deal with the scientists who were causing a bit of hassle here, because they didn't respect the people who weren't scientists who were running the place. But when I'd established my street cred, etc., nearly always it was a personal problem. Cheating on his wife, or his wife had left him, or whatever it happened to be. So I could then pass him back to be dealt with by really experienced people, because I only stayed here for 2 years. I didn't go to seminary with the intention of being an abbot. I didn't go to seminary with the intention of being a minister. I went to use it as a Bible college, because I was losing arguments because I didn't know the Bible. I wasn't an old enough Christian. But being in the States, if you've got a first degree, you can't do a second first degree. So I ended up doing a second degree, in which, and I felt that God had called me when I was there into some kind of pastoral type ministry. Now, it didn't work out. I'm not the right kind of person to be a pastor. I'm fully aware of my limitations here. I basically quite unashamedly used the Brie to teach me what part of Christianity seminary can't. In actual fact, the Brie did a fairly good job on this pragmatic side, but the two pairs of people who really mattered, I mean, seminary had taught me what Christianity is, but what Christianity really is with Jill's parents and my brother's wife's parents in California, Vicky's parents in California, they taught me what Christianity is about, and Jill's parents too. The Brie, seminary gave me some intellectual stuff and some practice. The Brie gave me a lot more practice. But while I loved the work here, it would have been quite sterile, I think, because I'm too much of an ideas man, personally.
Do you think that Schaefer was able to hold the pastoral and the intellectual very well in balance?
For himself,
yes. Yes,
yes. Yes, for himself, yes. Very definitely indeed. I mean, I said he came and sat down at my table at seminary, it was the only time I ever, and basically it was to ask me how I was getting on, to tell me that since Jeremy had been a worker at Labrie in Switzerland, that they had been praying for my family, his family, that's me and my father and mother and so on, ever since Jeremy had been there. And he was overjoyed to see me at seminary as a result. And the other thing, even after a little bit, he said, John, you have a mind like a rat trap. Use it to catch rats and not people. That was almost prophetic, because that was before I'd done this thing with this little lady from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use your mind to catch rats.
Yeah, it's not a game, is it?
Yeah, no. It's not a game.
It's not a game. It's too important to be a game.
Yeah.
And I've stopped doing university debates because I felt too much that's what they are.
Yeah, no, I stopped it for the same reason. I heard on the radio that first ever debate between Dawkins, and it happened to be Lennox.
Yes, John.
But it's the first time Dawkins had deigned to face up to a real person who could actually outthink him. And apart from the Christians making the idiot mistake of charging for the tape while it was free off the Dawkins website, which I thought was scandalous, basically, I don't think it changed anyone's mind, whatever. Those who were on Dawkins' side didn't hear Lennox or rejected him. Those who are Christians didn't hear what Dawkins was saying. I mean, I don't think Dawkins has got very much to say.
Right.
On that, but right.
And John Lennox has some of the gifts of Schaefer. I mean, I've never met him. I would love to. But I've seen him, on the screen, and he's such a gracious man. So gracious, but incisive, and clever.
And he is also very well versed in the scriptures.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very well versed in the scriptures.
Yeah.
I would consider him a good friend.
Yeah.
and always a joy to be around him, of course, and to listen to someone who's not pugnacious.
Yeah,
exactly. Actually, I am. I'm a pugnacious person, which is why I'm not good.
No, he's very gracious.
Where we have too many apologists that go for the jugular, and they want to win the argument. Well, of course we want to win the argument. Yeah, I mean, that's true.
But if we forget to win the person,
that's right.
You haven't won the argument.
That's right. And we haven't moved anybody.
No, no. Yeah.
And I remember I finished a debate with a very well-known atheist on a university, and he did make an insightful statement at the end. He said, now, the fact is that probably I've not convinced any of you Christians to come to my side. And of course, Dr. Little hasn't probably encouraged any of you atheists to come to his side. Now, he said, some that we might get are those who are in the middle and they don't know which way to go. He said, we might have helped them a little bit. But I think that sometimes, and I don't want to be overly critical of this, but I sometimes wonder if these debates aren't more like the Roman games.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
They become a spectacle.
I mean, what we should be doing, I think Lewis actually said it. I'm a great Lewis fan. Lewis said it at one point. He said, you know, you get these times when you have doubts. You wonder whether it's all true. You know, where'd you go? And then think what they think. Maybe it is true. And I think that's the key we've got to get.
Yeah. I think I totally agree with what you're saying. I'm just wondering, though, whether back in the, I don't know, the 70s or something, I wonder whether in those days some of these sort of discussions, I mean, I don't know that we had these great big debates, did we, between people like John Lennox and Dawkins?
No.
But, I mean, on a lower level, you know, I mean, in university missions, you'd have a debate, you know. I just wonder whether way back that time, I mean, at the time, for instance, in the, I don't know about it, but in the British universities, when Schaefer was just beginning to be known, I mean, when I was at university, there weren't many people. I mean, Escape from Reason, it was the first book that was published, came out in my second year. There were just a very small group of us who really knew about Libri. The Christian Unions was sort of split. They were charismatic. They're all over the place. They weren't really thinking in a lot of the time. But I'm just wondering whether some of those discussions back then weren't so sterile, because it was a time when it was the very beginning. I mean, not everybody, I'm sure. There were, of course, there were Christians who thought before Schaefer. But, you know, as a Christian culture, as we've been saying, you know, it did show that people were thinking, oh, Christian, we can think, we can. Very there is a worldview. There is a. So I don't want to be. I totally agree. I think anyway. I think we've. You know, times are changing.
The culture's moved.
We've moved on, and something that I've really appreciated, actually, what you said, because I was there last night, and what Andrew said last week, and the guy, he was another Southern, well, he's from Texas, is that Southern? Oh, no, not really, I don't know. Anyway, the guy before who gave the lecture on sort of technology and that, was that, you know, we have, as Christians, we have got to stand sort of in our place and argue from that. I think, and I wondered when I heard that, whether maybe again, there was a time in those very early days where you kind of went more into their territory in order to bring them out. But I think our culture has moved so far now that I don't think... I mean, we still have to communicate. Yes, of course, all that we've been saying is true. We have to be loving. We have to be patient. We have to ask questions, but not, you know, push in an aggressive way. But I think we have to make it more and more clear that this is where we stand, this is the context, and we are here. And, well, you know, rather than sort of, as because I don't know whether you said, I think Andrew said it last week when he was lecturing, that, you know, we so often almost didn't use these terms, but sort of go into their territory and argue almost within the secular context, and actually it doesn't get you anywhere, in fact.
You can't use their categories.
No, exactly.
Talking about evolution, you don't stand a chance if you try that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I think Schaefer did succeed in doing, but perhaps not as successfully as he might have done, was the change in the culture over the time. When I first came here as a non-Christian, but then for a couple of years when I was coming evenings and on weekends and things, people were coming knowing not only that there are questions, but there are answers. When we came back to work 3 years later, that wasn't the case. They still had the questions, but they weren't sure there were answers. And talking to the people over the years that work here, at one stage it went almost solidly into story. We've got to deal with your story.
That's still where it is.
And that's still, I think, where it is, but it's not as clearly, because I don't think it's even as rational as postmodernism any longer.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, it's not just trying to fit some sort of meta-narrative to the whole game. You've now got to deal with people in a very different way. And I think that's what Le Bris here,
yes,
succeeded in doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Schaefer began that process, but then, you know, I'd love to see what he would be doing now.
Yes.
That would be the real thing.
Yes. It surely would be. And as you're saying, when you come back, they think there are no answers. Today, I think they don't even think there are any questions.
That's probably a good way of putting it.
You know, so how do we deal with that? I still think Schaefer is the one to look to. I think he gives us a model that works in our day. Matter of fact, I think that it works anytime.
Well, because he didn't concentrate on the method. He didn't concentrate on the philosophy. He did not concentrate on the history of art. He concentrated on the person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have problems with people we know who are not movable, basically.
Sure, we all do.
And, you know, as far as we're concerned, all that is left is prayer, because mm-hmm. they know the truth. It has been given to them.
Yes.
I mean, I've actually once had it with a work colleague of mine. We got to the point where he said, okay, I know. I know it's true that Jesus died for me and I don't want it. And I've never spoken to him since, because he walked out and I didn't chase him. I didn't think. I'd done what I could do.
Yeah.
I told him what the truth was.
Well, Jesus let the rich young ruler walk away weeping and didn't go chasing him.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to live with that decision.
Yeah.
And we can trust God by His Spirit to maybe work in the life if you just let Him live with it. That's the decision you want. That's what you have to be responsible for.
Well, I mean, what I don't know is what's happened to that man now, 30 years down the line.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. No, it's not. It's one of the great joys I have as a Christian that I am not responsible for what happens tomorrow. Not my problem. So I don't need even to worry about it. But then and I actually, because of my kind of character, that actually I can do.
Mm-hmm.
I tend not to worry about tomorrow.
And Schaefer, when he's still in St. Louis, but it might have been when he was pastoring in Pennsylvania, said that he came to that realization. That just took a terrible burden from him. That he was not responsible. Only he was responsible for being a faithful declarer of the truth and lover of persons.
Yep.
But beyond that,
That's the Holy Spirit's job.
It's that is.
Yep.
Exactly. So, well, to kind of bring this to a close. What would you say that you haven't said that you want to say about Schaefer? I won't dictate. I'll just say.
The wisdom of a man who knows what his wife is like, that she never tidies up and has a room into which he can throw her clothes so that she knows where to find them. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just, again, a man of prayer and a really concern for the individual, whoever they were, whoever, you know, didn't have to be intellectual, just people. He really genuinely cared for them, I think, and was willing to communicate at whatever level, in whatever way was necessary.
So that meant he had to be not first talking at people.
No, absolutely.
You can't explain your faith to the docker I think this is him. Is that quote of him?
To the dustman or something.
Yeah.
You can't explain your faith to the docker, you ain't got it.
Though, you know, I'm sure you know, that what LaBrie starts in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
In 1960, you're aware of the article that comes out in Time magazine. And the Time magazine, can you imagine an article on Schaefer 5 years after LaBrie in 1960? And it's not an extensive article, but he was referred to as the missionary to the European intellectual.
I'm sure he loved that.
Yeah, probably not, but it is amazing to me that without any advertising, no slick, you know, brochure, no social media, just meeting people, people going home, telling about what they had heard, right? It's kind of like what you see in Jesus is getting his disciples together, you know. Oh, I've talked to him, you come talk to him, please, too. So... It's amazing. Now maybe we'll never replicate that. And I don't think we want to, because the Spirit of God works differently
in different times.
Yeah. So I think there's always a danger in our saying we're going to fit into this and that's going to give us success. Don't you think Schaefer would say don't do that?
Yeah,
I'm absolutely sure he would. It used to upset students no end. They would be... I mean, LaBrie is an amazing... experience. And people want to hold on to this wonderful experience, but Schaefer would say, and did say, and it used to upset them when we reminded them, the church is the everlasting and eternal principle.
Yes.
God could close this down today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So get that into your head.
Yes.
I mean, that is the thing that he said. And so funny enough, you know FrancisSchaefer.org on Facebook or not? Dan Gwynn and...
Oh, Dan, yes, I know Dan, yeah.
Yeah, no, we've actually just had a minor discussion on that where I reminded them that this is what Schaefer actually said. Because Jenna Ellis, is it Jenna Ellis? The lawyer, woman lawyer?
I don't know.
Anyway, she's been on there and she actually said, I'm detecting a little bit here that you're talking about the man and not worrying about what he was talking about.
Yes.
Good on you, girl.
Yes, yes. In fact, when we received custodian, we didn't receive ownership, custodian of the Schaefer material.
Mm-hmm.
And at that ceremony, I tried to make it clear in what I said. And I said specifically, please do not think we're making an icon out of Schaefer.
Yeah.
So, but having said that, he still has such a profound voice for us today.
Yeah.
So let us learn to think how he thought. Not replicate what he did, but to think how he thought, place things that are important to him, because I think they are important in the scheme of things, and the importance of Scripture, and the importance of prayer, which I think maybe we still hang on to prayer, but I'm not so sure that we're that concerned about Scripture.
Well, I always say to people, I mean, often, sometimes I feel, mate, am I betraying LaBrie? You know, I love LaBrie, I've worked here for years, but I always say, you know, basically, these things come from the Bible. That's what is important. Yeah. Never mind LaBrie, don't look at LaBrie.
Yeah,
if LaBrie is not teaching things that are in the Bible, then forget it. I'm not interested. And it's not. And also for the church too, if these things are important, we should be incorporating them. They should be part of our church communities. Yeah. Not, I mean, here we have this wonderful resource. It's right on our doorstep. Yes. We have a LaBrie, a residential LaBrie, and that's great. And we can use it and we should use it. But at the same time, the church itself should should be, yeah, I mean, we should be thinking like this. If this is biblical thinking, it better be, otherwise I don't know what we're doing, that's what we should have in our churches. And I really appreciated what you said last night about that actually the church is the key. That is where people will look, not only see the thinking, they will see the actions and the love. And that's ultimately the two things together that will draw people.
And this is, I'm so pleased that you've made that claim, that this was Schaeffer's belief.
Absolutely.
It was the church.
Yeah.
And
church is, uses the Bible. The church is, it will stand forever.
Yes, that's right.
Exactly.
And this is it's a ministry, as you say, it doesn't advertise, it doesn't have this slick and glossy stuff. It very, very rarely even asks its prayer people for money. This might point out a need, but it doesn't ask for it. But it's a faith ministry.
Yeah.
The principles of re include that. Yeah. That if God wants to shut it down, God shuts it down.
From the very beginning, it was that.
Yeah.
There's only one other ministry that I knew that was on that same belief, and that was, you may not have known, Dehan, M.R. Dehan. He had a radio ministry. Mm-hmm. I think at one time he might have been the pastor of Moody Bible Church.
Right.
But he had radio Bible class, and they never asked for money.
Right.
Never asked for money because that was his belief. And you got to think, Schaeffer, when they set out for Labrie and they had these five things that are going to guide Labrie. But I think I've heard somewhere where Schaeffer said, but this is how we were led to do it.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean you have to do it the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. He did say that. Yeah.
The freedom is, I guess that's...
Well, our freedom is freedom under God.
Yes.
With the help
of the Holy Spirit. We don't have to copy something. In fact, we're almost bound. I mean, no one else could actually match Schaeffer. But, I mean, for instance, there isn't anyone, no matter... I've got some strong thoughts about some people, but there's no one who can match Lewis either, or Chesterton, or Dorothy Sayers when she put her mind to it.
I know it. That's right. But God was pleased to use them for that time and in that way. And for me, and there can always be disagreement about this, but I think that's what Romans 9 is speaking to, not salvation, but that God calling us into a particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of us, it's not very dramatic.
No.
It isn't. But that's all right, because if that's where I am...
Unless you want it to be dramatic, in which case it's wrong.
Yeah. And you try to make it dramatic. Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much for the time that you've devoted to this. And I hope that it helps other people to have a better understanding of Schaeffer, the man. And so we can get these two together, that we keep the intellect and the pastoral, I'll just speak of it in that fashion, to keep these things conjoined, because that's what he was about.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing while you're still recording?
Surely.
And that is Edith.
Oh, yes, please.
You cannot miss Edith out of this equation.
No. And just tell me why, because Edith has been in many of the other conversations. So just briefly tell me, why can't we leave Edith out of the equation? She didn't write the God who is there.
She wrote a lot of other things.
Yes.
I personally only ever met her once.
Mm.
And this was amusing in that it was at the marriage of one of her... grandchildren. And I don't know if you know my brother very well, but for years he suffered from really bad hearing things. Now I suffer from noise-induced headaches. Unrelated.
Mm.
But after the wedding, the bells rang, and I was actually talking to Mrs. S just about, I mean, she's in her 90s by now.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you should talk to the preacher. She said, he has the same problem with his ears. I thought, Mrs. S, you don't know who you're talking to. She's such a lovely... I mean, again, in the middle of any conversation, people mattered.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was true for her as well.
Yes.
I mean, probably even more so for her, to be honest. I mean, hidden art.
Yes. Yes.
Was actually, I'm not even a visual person, mm-hmm. but hidden art was actually fairly profound for me mm-hmm. as an idea. You know, everything can be done nicely.
It was very influential in my wife's life.
Well, just hanging up washing properly. actually, that comes from something that, what's his name? Thurber. Thurber wrote. Right. You know, you've hung a nice line of washing.
Well, that's wonderful. And so, yeah, thank you for giving the time.